Hi, this is Cass. Welcome to the Curio Podcast, where two old friends hash out current events, politics, and whatever strikes our fancy. Visit us on Twitter at Podcast Curio. Join our Facebook page. Check out our website, curiopodcast.org. And don't forget to subscribe. Thanks for listening.
I'm staring down at my palm.
That's funny. I remembered number.
That's funny. You remembered that number when all this stuff is going on in your head.
I don't remember numbers too good. I'm not very smart with the numbers.
All right.
I love that.
Should we get started?
Yeah.
Sure.
Did we just start, though?
I guess we could have just started. Maybe.
People are tuning in going, who is this male voice?
Who's this guy?
We're up and running.
Who's this guy?
This is the first guy we've had on the show besides Quinn and Doug.
Yeah.
I'm totally honored.
Yep.
Thank you for having me here, you guys. My name is Michael Degarian. Some people know me as Digger.
Most people. I was going to ask you that.
Like, Michael Degarian's my real name.
I know.
I flew out of the chute. I was supposed to be Aroxy. I was supposed to be a girl. So I was supposed to be my grandmother's name.
Oh.
But I came out a guy and they were like shell shocked. Like, what are we going to do?
What's the most American name, Mike.
What's the most, and that was the popular name at the time.
It was.
And there were like three Michaels in my class when I was in second grade. And my friend Brad Soper, like nobody could pronounce my last name right. So he just said, well, just call him Digger. And it just kind of stuck since like seven years old.
What I was going to ask you was, I know my brother, he's a giant with red hair. And everyone around his age that he grew up with and he knows now, they all call him Red. And when my mom and my sister and I are around, we call him Steven because that's his name. And the people around, like, look at us weird. And I was just wondering, like, when you're with people that you know now and someone from your past comes up with Digger, like, is Yesti used to people calling you Digger? Does she call you Digger or does she call you Mike?
She calls me Mikey. I think the only people that would call me Mike were, like, when I was a teacher.
Oh,
they mostly call me Mr. D, but they might, you know, the staff people would call me Mike.
Right.
But I mean, Digger's pretty much followed me to Humboldt and to Santa Cruz and San Francisco.
Well, you're a surfer too, and that works.
That fits.
Right?
I guess.
It's kind of a...
It's kind of easy in some ways because you don't really have to say your last name.
Right.
Because there's not too many Diggers in America.
I guess it's a big name in Australia. Yeah.
Is it really?
Yeah, I guess what I was told is that like during the war, the Diggers were the guys who dug in and made those trenches.
Oh.
So I guess it's kind of honorable.
Oh, they're like heroes there.
Oh.
And so I guess it's like a common nickname there.
And you've been to Australia, right?
Yeah, I've been to Australia a couple times and around there but ironically, I think a lot of people were calling me Mike, unless there are people I knew from a different world. And I was reintroduced to, it was kind of a rough time to get Digger as a nickname because I was in second grade and that toy Digger the Dog came out.
Oh.
Digger the Dog, Digger he plays with you when you explore. Just pull his leash, go for a walk. Oh, and the teasing was relentless.
This memory obviously is
stuck with you.
This memory totally went away until the last year. I have an old friend, Edith, in this little town I've been going to in Peru since the 90s. And I saw her with her little kids, and they were towing this plastic toy down, and the kids were just destroying it. And I realized, oh my God, Edith, where'd you get that? She's like, I got it from my aunt. She passed away, and just this old plastic toy. I'm like, that's a Digger the Dog. That was like a torturous thing in my childhood. You have the Digger the Dog. And meanwhile, our kids are just destroying it. Like it probably just disintegrated because it's like, you know, 50-year-old plastic.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my God, that's a Digger the Dog. Like that thing was like a torturous part of my childhood. But now I'm just laughing at it, you know?
Right. Well, you get to an age where stuff like that.
Yeah. You kind of just.
Doesn't bother
it doesn't bother you know, at all. You know?
It. So do you want to tell everyone how Kim knows you, how I know you, how...
Ziggy,
how do we
farted.
Know each other?
He farted.
Well, we all grew up in the San Gabriel Valley, and I'm thinking we met at a party in like 1989.
Something like that.
Probably.
When I moved home from Newport back to the San Gabriel Valley.
Right, yes.
I almost want to say it was like a tree people party in Sierra Madre Canyon.
Oh, yeah,
probably. Kind of close to where Doug lived for a while.
Yeah.
Well, you and Doug went, did you guys go to school together? Were you in same
class? Yeah, we were in high school together. Okay. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So.
Doug left early, but yeah, I met Doug in high school.
Okay. I met Cassie in high school.
Yeah.
And then Cassie and I met Digger.
Well, you dated him. I was just in the peripheral. We've been drinking wine.
Cheers!
We forgot to cheers.
Woo!
And while Kim and Digger were dating, Digger kept telling me about his friend, this guy Doug. And I'd be like, eh. And he'd say, oh, yeah, he argues with his girlfriend all the time. He's got this bunk girlfriend. I remember you saying that. He's got this bunk girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, I'm not interested. And you kept saying things like, oh, you guys would be perfect together. And I'd be like, And then you were away on one of your trips, and Kim and I went up to the mountain jam, and I saw Doug from across the campground, and lightning bolts went off in my head, and my whole body, like, froze. And I told Kim, like, oh, he's the one. He's the number one finalist. Like, that's him. And Kim turns around and looks and goes, oh, that's Doug. That's the guy Digger's been telling you about. So I like to think that you're some sort of weird, like, love fairy between...
Matchmaker, a modern day matchmaker.
In mine and Doug's love story. So thank you.
He knew.
Well, thank you.
He knew.
And you know what? You just mirrored what Doug said. You know, when I saw her, it was like a love at first sight thing. Like, I remember him telling me the same thing from his side of it, and it was a complete parallel.
Well, like lightning bolts, which I'm not the kind of person that believes in magical thinking or prayer or any of that kind of bullshit, but I really think that he and I were meant to be together, and part of that is you already knew. You were like, you guys would be perfect together. You already had said that, so thank you. Here we are, 20 years.
Well, thank you.
These
are two things that I don't remember. The Quinn thing and this.
Oh, yeah.
These are all, like, I mean, I feel like I got to work on my memory a little bit.
You are getting old.
Yes. Yes.
It's kind of cool, though.
We're all going that direction.
Yes. We're all old.
I have a love-hate relationship with time. Just in general. It's true. But it's like how many years? You did the math with the numbers.
Doug and I have been together 23 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
almost.
You guys met and got married pretty...
Within a year and a half. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he didn't ask me. Did you hear this story? My husband did not propose marriage to me.
You asked him?
No. He came home one day from work. Or no, I came home from work one day. He would get home before me. And he had a piece of paper with three dates written down on it. And he goes, I went up to the nature friends and they said we could get married on any of these days. Which one do you...
Oh my God, you're kidding.
No.
Really?
That was how he proposed marriage. And I went... I guess July 18th is cool. And we got married. That was it. He's never proposed to me.
all the lightning
beautiful.
Bolts and
that.
All of that just happened in the beginning. And then it was just
it's like
butter after that.
It's like the lightning bolts meant that we were sure we were going to be together. It didn't.
It was a sure thing.
He knew I would say yes. So why ask, you know? I guess. I don't know.
It was just a known thing.
It
was a known thing.
Right.
Aww.
This is our destiny. It's just really a choice between these three dates.
Right.
Yeah.
Speaking of, how did you meet your wife, Yesti?
The story of meeting Yesti, well, it's really interesting. I just come from like a 6, 7, 8 months counterclockwise around South America. I came home to this my dream job in Santa Cruz, like $50 an hour to run a swim program.
What?
I felt like I was at the apex of my swim teaching world.
Right.
My boss wanted me to take over this triathlon that I'd helped work on before. And he wanted me to take it over from this guy from Uganda that I really thought he was kind of eccentric, but I didn't want to take his job. And my boss kind of wanted to shove him out the door. And I said, nah, I can work with that guy, you know. And then the guy was like, he wanted people to teach swimming who didn't even know how to swim just because he thought it was an interesting concept. But in swimming in school districts, it's a huge liability. Like someone drowns and someone dies,
right.
and the teacher doesn't know what they're doing. Like,
you've got to be able
it's
to
a liability
save
nightmare.
The person who doesn't know how to swim, so you should probably know how to swim.
And this guy couldn't swim. He couldn't swim across a tiny backyard pool, and so I was like humoring it. And I was just stoked because I felt like, oh, this is great. I can surf all morning. I show up at 2. I get $50 an hour. I'm teaching all these people in Santa Cruz how to teach swimming. I work for the greatest guy, Joe Troutwine. He worked in international schools in South America. The dude letting me get away with murder.
Right.
And like a month into it, the guy from Uganda, I went over his head.
Did you teach him to swim?
I couldn't. He was one of those people who just
was not going to swim.
No, he wasn't interested. Okay. He was really good at dancing. And my boss, Joe Troutwine, I went over his head and I called my boss because he was like my buddy, you know, he was like the total old boys club. And I was like, dude, this is ridiculous. I can't do this. I'm out of here. And I quit. And he tried to get me a stay and I left my dream job. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to Indonesia. And, you know, I still have money left on this trip. I'm going to go. So I went to Indonesia. I was getting some good waves in Bali. And I had this friend, Diego, that Vince, my buddy Vince Longo, and I met camping. And he started this surf camp for the old Peruvian surf champ in this island off of Yesti's hometown called Roti. It's the Indonesian word for bread. Mm-hmm. So I was on my way to Roti. And Yesti was on my flight. I didn't meet her on the flight, but I met her in baggage claim.
Oh my God. Talk about fate. Go ahead.
Yeah, wow. I met her in baggage claim. And it was really interesting because Indonesia is a really conservative country.
Yeah. So I've heard that.
It's not the kind of place like Latin America where everyone's real spicy and, hey, you're cute. And, you know, it's like Indonesians are pretty conservative. So when an Indonesian woman walks up to me and is talking to me, and she has a tattoo of a butterfly on her chest.
Right.
And she had gotten it because she had gone through a breakup. She cut off all her hair and she got this tattoo of a butterfly because in her way of, she got it because it was like a transformation, right? From the worm to the butterfly. But the word for hooker in Indonesia is night butterfly. So here comes this attractive woman.
Oh, and she's
got a tattoo, which is pretty conservative. It's a tattoo of a butterfly, and she has enough money to be on a plane. She speaks English. She's coming up and talking to me.
Right.
And I'm like, and I had just gone through a really interesting experience with baby mama in South America.
Right.
And I was pretty scared of women at the time. I was just like, And she just started talking to me, and then she invited me to a baptism party at her house.
That's weird.
And so I was like, okay. So we went, and then we kind of tried to, you know, I was trying to just be the regular guy, hook up, and it was just like, you know, she's a real goody-goody, you know, without going into too many details. Like,
Yessie?
She waited till she was like, you know, she was 30, right? So I was like, wait a minute, I'm not making any progress here, man. This is what did I get the bad girl gone good? I couldn't figure it out. And she's got the tattoo. I mean, like,
she's talking to me.
Figures.
What the heck's going on?
Yeah. And so I go to the party and I meet, you know, because she wants me to meet dad because I'm a teacher. Her dad runs a school. They're all super educated, like valedictorian types. Oh. You know, how I married somewhat valedictorian type. It's like the world's biggest mystery. And Yesti invited me, and I met the family, and there was a huge baptism party at her house. And then she came to the little island where Diego had the surf camp, came visit me. And then, you know, we had like dates, and it was really interesting because it was like It was like dates I picture in the 30s and 40s because her cousin, Bong. Yes, you heard that right. Her cousin's name is Bong. And her cousin, Bong, from Sumba, the island where they still do the Pasola Festival and throw spears at each other in March.
Cool, cool.
He came as an escort. So she came to my hotel room and we watched a movie. But the door had to be open, and he was sitting in the car, like, looking at us whole time.
And she's in her 30s.
Yeah, she was, like, 30 or 31.
Wow.
And, you know, she's, like, devoted, religious Catholic. She goes to church, like, all the time.
Wow.
So it's interesting.
Yeah.
I wish she would have come today because, you know, we just trip on each other. It's really interesting being with someone. I hear people go, oh yes, well, I had a husband from Britain, or I know it's so different and we just couldn't get along. And in Indonesia, it's literally on the other side of the world.
It's like the opposite of everything.
Yeah. Everything is you just nailed it. Everything is the complete opposite. It's not like Latin American culture where European, it's kind of close.
Right, right.
You know? So wow. It was really interesting how I met her, and then.
So how did she know English already? Do they teach it there in Indonesia?
She knows English because she was super smart. Like, she was educated as an engineer, and basically she grew up in her hometown till she was 18, and then she basically stayed in her college town, like I stayed in Humboldt. She stayed in her college town in Yogyakarta, which is central Java. It's mm-hmm. It's kind of like the Berkeley of Indonesia. It's full of universities. It's real cultural kind of capital. Yeah.
Is it a little more liberal-ish or?
No, it's actually really conservative because there's a lot more Muslims there.
Oh, okay.
That was a huge challenge for us living in Indonesia. And it was one of the reasons I really couldn't live there because guys would just say horrible things to her all the time, assuming that because she was with a Western, she was a hooker. So wow. I was like getting in fights like all the time.
Oh no.
You know? And it was just like, oh man, it's so hot.
I can't imagine.
It's so hot. There's humidity.
The surf's great.
I can't imagine Yesti putting up with that, though. She seems like such a spicy little meatball.
She's
like,
super spicy.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to make her mad.
She's nothing like people, you know, she's nothing like, you know, you think you're going to have like the obedient Asian wife who's going to do the dishes and clean. Heck no. Like, her town where she's from Timor, NTT, and she's Florinese. And the security forces in Indonesia, there's 13,000 islands there. They pick their security forces from her island.
Okay.
Oh, shit.
Because they're ruthless badasses, you know, and she's ruthless.
She's no
really sweet
violet,
and she's a fantastic person. She's the nicest, most giving, hosting, open-hearted
person.
She's
not going to let people walk all over her.
Yeah. I mean, she can give the death stare like no others.
So there's a presence about Yesti.
There's a presence.
She just, and it's not big and scary, but it's solid. Like,
I like
it's
it.
It's solid.
I was super excited
I'm friendly
that she was
and
supposed
nice
to be here.
I know. I really
sad.
Wish she would have come. And that's just another cultural observation. Like, I was telling Doug, we walk in, because we kind of have this thing where, like, our jobs are just kind of a mean to pay our bills and we're going to
so
have a lifestyle.
Right.
Yeah.
She's really career driven.
Really?
She's
That's
super
funny
career
that you
driven.
Ended up with somebody
I
like
know.
That.
And so it's really tough because people think people always go, oh my God, you guys are the cutest, sweetest couple. And you know, in reality, like we love each other. And I mean, I couldn't have asked for, you know, a better human being, you know? She has so many great qualities, but we fight like dogs all the time.
Really?
Oh yeah. And a lot of it's language misunderstandings. We're saying the same stuff, but
well, I mean, couples who speak the same language do that. They say the same stuff, and it's miscommunicated.
Oh yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because one person will stop listening momentarily, maybe.
So Yesti still goes to church all the time?
Yesti still goes to church, and I hadn't been to church since like. I went to Catholic church when I was like 17 with the Longo family at the river because everyone else, because they all went and I just
Everybody's
didn't want to be
going,
the only one. And
right.
then I went and took communion because I was like, they're like,
Free
dude, you
food.
Took communion. You're not even Catholic. I'm like, I didn't want to be there on the bench all alone while you guys went up there. I thought I'd follow along.
Give me the magic cracker.
Yeah, and when I first brought her to America, well, you met her the first weekend at Harley Strictly Bluegrass. You and Paul met her.
Yeah.
And it was just culture shock. She was overwhelmed because she comes from a country where, one, yep. gay people are not out in the open. Two, people are not smoking weed out in the open. And
no.
people just aren't, you know, they're dressing freaky for cultural stuff. But like, maybe Harley Strictly is its own cultural thing.
It's its own thing. Yeah.
So this, it was overwhelming for
this
her.
This was in San Francisco right after
Golden
she
Gate
came.
Park, right?
Golden Gate yeah. Park. So it was, oh my gosh, it was such a cool weekend.
It's a but great, yeah. It's so the first weekend of October.
People are walking around smoking joints. This is before it was legal.
Well, San Francisco's always been different.
Yeah, it was, everything was hanging out. Was
yeah, fun. She was tripping because was people fun. Were smoking weed and cops were like, hey, put that out.
Yeah.
And that would have been like a year in jail. And
going to jail.
Right. Yeah. Isn't Indonesia the place where you can't even like spit your gum out on the ground?
Or no, is that that's Malaysia? Singapore.
Singapore.
Okay. That's Singapore. You cannot drink or eat food on the subway. You can't chew gum, period. These are all $500 fines, or they were like 20 years ago. If you don't flush the toilet, I don't know who finds out that that was your stuff, but $500.
DNA.
Wow.
Singapore's
cameras?
Pretty intense. I used to go through there a lot because it's like a travel hub
right, yeah.
when you're on cheap flights, and I end up getting an acting job there and stuff. It's a trippy place.
Wait.
An acting job in the Philippines?
In the Singapore, not in the Philippines. Singapore. But actually, ironically, it was related to the Philippines because... I was on a flight. I went to the Philippines and the surf was just dead. And after like 2 or 3 weeks, I was with this older Australian guy and he was super excited when the surf got knee to waist high. And I was like, when I saw how excited he was because it was knee to waist high, I was like, that's it. I'm out of here. I'm going to Indonesia. So I got a flight to Singapore and this is pre-internet. I'm in the middle of the jungle for like a month or 6 weeks. And I did like a 48-hour like hell mission on boats and buses and ferries to get back to Singapore. And I get to the airport like, you know, 4 hours from my flight. And I'm like, flight canceled. What happened?
Oh, no.
There's no staff for Philippine Airlines. Like, where you been, man? Don't you know? Philippine Airlines went out of business. And this is like pre-internet. And I'm
You're
like,
kidding. So you had a ticket with them?
So I had a ticket with them. And they're like, well, dude, they're out of business. Like, I don't know where you've been. I'm like, I've been on like a little island with no news.
Right.
So I didn't have a plane ticket home,
so I went
to this hostel I knew from before, and it was on 75 Beach Road. I remember it was super bargain. You know, you had like all you could eat tea and toast in the morning.
Yep, I love those
you
places.
You know, just let's just carb up. And they came in looking for actors for a Chinese soap opera because there was an episode where this Chinese Singaporean girl goes to Australia and she's an exchange student. And she gets really sick. So they don't have any Australian girl actors. They have these two English girls. They're supposed to be...
Similar, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're basically Westerners. And then I had like long hair and I had to put it back in ponytail. And they took me to the movie studio. They gave me a suit and stethoscope and all that. And,
Oh my God.
And I played the doctor where I basically like... And this is supposed to be taking place in Australia... And there's the, like her two giggly Australian friends because giggling's international, right? Everyone giggles, you know, or they're hanging out. And then like I'm the guy who walks in, you know, when she's like really sick and looks at her and says, you know, does the stethoscope. What do you call that?
Stethoscope.
Thing. Yeah. And then look at her like, oh, you're. Well,
it's bad.
It's bad.
So did you have to fake an Australian accent or was your American accent just good enough for them?
To be honest with you, there was barely any words spoken.
My second question.
Ah.
Is there proof of this anywhere on the internet? Can I see it with my own eyes?
No, I kind of always would have liked to have that clip.
He's saying no, but I think he means yes.
We can find it.
No, I mean.
Do you know the name of the soap opera?
I didn't even get the name. I mean, I have a bunch of random stuff on tape, but that's not one
of them. What if we just Google the soap opera Digger was on?
What if we just Google soap opera Chinese? Is that what you're saying it was? Australia Doctor Giggling.
Okay. Yeah. What year?
1998.
Okay.
So did you earn enough money to get back to the States?
I did.
Okay.
I did. I almost had to get a loan from the American Embassy. But I got a one-way ticket home, came home, and went back to my muffin route in Humboldt.
Dude, the muffin man.
The muffin man of Humboldt.
How many countries do you think you've been in to around?
I counted recently, and I think it was like, well, Puerto Rico is not a country. So, well, and Hong Kong was just an airport. So I think I'm at like 50, 51.
Wow.
So I'm excited because my years are passing the countries as I'm kind of in this
right
suck it up and take care of the folks kind of stage, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to go to go to Fiji in January. I just booked a ticket yesterday with my buddy JJ Brito, like old feral traveling surfer. He used to live on 7th Street in Huntington.
Oh, wow. Fiji.
And you're going to surf?
Yeah. I'm going to surf and just stay at his place. I'm a little bit nervous because I'm kind of out of shape and
you always say, you've been saying that for 30 years.
Yeah. Well, it's tough. Like you were talking about, as you get older, it's a blessing and a curse. You know, you feel a little bit more okay in your own skin, but things don't work as much as you want to.
I think for me, it's like, what do I want to do and can I do it? Am I able to do it? You know what I mean? Like, can I do that anymore?
Yeah.
We were looking at a map of Italy, and I started looking at the Dolomites and like the Italian Alps and stuff. And I was like, oh, I want to go there. I want to hike all the way up to the Dolomites. And then I thought, no, you can't. You can't do that.
They've got funiculars for all that. Just go.
But I want to do it with my feet. But they won't work that way anymore. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I do.
You have to do some training. Old.
She's going to Italy, did you hear?
To do some training.
Oh, congratulations.
Thanks, yeah.
So you did a European trip recently, and it was like out of your comfort zone. I remember seeing your posts on Facebook.
It was it's a weird time to be overseas.
Yeah.
And I think you were in Italy recently too, right?
Yes.
So, you know, because, you know, I mean, you know, we travel at different times and where
during
people
different
are,
presidencies.
We're during different presidencies where some people are like, hey, what's up? And or they just don't even talk to you and they look at you like, oh, you're such an idiot.
Yeah. Right.
So it's kind of one of those times. So that, I think, was the awkward time for me.
Right. Did anybody talk to you about the president while you were there?
No. And I didn't, like in the beginning when I first used to go traveling, when it was the first Gulf War, I remember telling people I was Canadian. I don't do that
that's
anymore.
That's what you did. That's what you did when we're in Africa.
Yeah, I was just like Canadian.
You're like, tell everybody we're from Canada.
Yeah, I mean, like, Steve Crony and Corona Man and I would be traveling Cambodia, and he would pretend to be Italian, and I would pretend to be Peruvian.
God.
Speak in Italian.
He is Italian.
Right? And he speaks Italian. And I would just say I'm Peruvian and speak Spanish. And, you know, we would avoid everyone.
Your Spanish accent is so white, though.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not perfect.
It's not perfect, yeah.
It's totally fluent, but it's not like I never took a semester in school.
So how did you learn it?
Immersion.
Necessity. I mean, I had like 3 weeks in Guatemala in 94 and like one of those intensive, like 4 hours a day, one-on-one. But mostly it's just, if you really want to go low budget and stay a long time and just, you know, you're going to be away from gringos and you're going to be like staying with families and you're going to be staying in places where you have to go to local market. And there's, you know, when a lot of the surf spots back then and still now, you know, your life's going to be more fun. You're going to get by for cheaper. You're going to get a deeper experience than if you can just speak to the English speaking people. Cause they're usually just after you for the walk-in banknote or
they've
whatever.
They've learned English because they want your money.
Yeah. Right. Somehow or another. So, yeah. And Spanish is one of those languages that you can just build on. Whereas like, you know, I've learned little bits of Swahili, Cambodian, Vietnamese, Thai, and they all just kind of go away because you come home
and you
remember the restaurant
words,
maybe, you know, and that. But Spanish, you can just always keep building on it, you know?
Especially here in California.
Yeah.
Have you ever felt like your life was in danger while you were traveling? I mean, besides
getting the
diarrhea or anything.
Tons of times. Oh, yeah.
I've been
I've been really, really, really sick.
I'm gonna die.
My worst sicknesses, yeah. I mean, those ones, I never really thought that. You know, my life was in danger so many times, I couldn't count. Like a lot of surfing times, a lot of times when I've been in like knockdown, drag out brawls in the streets in Peru. I've been robbed more times in Peru than everywhere else combined.
And you keep going back.
I'm a glutton for punishment. And I have a daughter there, so it's right. You know, it's part of the deal. It's just, you know, you got to show up.
Are the waves really good there? Is that why you keep going back there?
It's not the best waves in the world, but it's not the worst. I mean, you know, they're really long waves. They're all left, which is a surfer's backside, so it's harder. Your back is to the wall, so to say. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Peru, like Kim was saying, I have a love-hate relationship with, you know, I have a love-hate relationship with Peru because, you know, I have some really great friends there that have had my back through some ridiculous stuff.
Yeah.
And then there's just a lot of crazy, kind of like anywhere, like America, you know, there's a bunch of idiots and there's a bunch of really cool people.
Yeah,
know?
But we're used to our idiots here. It's fun to see idiots from other places.
Well, and sometimes, you know, the non-idiots become even more precious when you're around the mega idiots.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a pendulum.
What did Yesti think about Europe?
She is really interested in it because, like, I can't get her to go to Thailand or Vietnam. Like, those places are really interesting, exotic.
To you,
but
to me,
not to her.
Exactly. You just said it to me
so
because it's kind of similar.
Culture. It's like,
you know, to them, they always look up to, you know, the westernized modern countries. So I think it was cool. The one thing that was really cool was, I think for her, people, and this is a tell of the times right now that we're in, is that people were totally friendly to an Indonesian, you know.
Oh, right.
But not to an American.
But not right. to an American. Who can blame them?
When I was in Spain last time, my friend and I, we stopped in front of a bar that was called Obama. It was an American sports bar called Obama in Spain. And there was a bouncer outside trying to get us to come in. And we were like, oh, no, we're kind of heading back to the hostel. And he goes, so why did you guys vote for Trump? He said. And I was like,
and you're like,
we didn't. I got
we're coming
pissed.
In. Buy us a beer. We've
but
got something to
their,
say.
They're, what's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah,
perspective
I mean,
of what's happening here. That we're all like, we're all Trump.
Yeah.
Oh, they make fun of us relentlessly.
They make fun of us relentlessly.
Yeah. It's, you know? My cousin Astrid from Germany was like, oh, God, yeah, yeah.
You guys are terrible. Congratulations.
Yeah, you guys are dumb.
So embarrassing.
You know, like, I mean,
when you know one language, you think you're just hot shit all the time. You throw your money around. You're all puffed up.
You throw your war around.
You wear, do you remember in, it was in Tanzania and we were going to go on safari and we stopped in some place and we were eating. No, it was when we bought our safari trip.
Okay.
And the guy in front of us was he was an American white guy and he looked like he was straight out of a cartoon with his safari outfit
no.
on the khaki shorts the
Dude,
socks
so.
The
he
boots,
bought the uniform yeah
the hat the whole nine yards and it was just like I remember thinking oh my God that's so embarrassing
like, I'm Canadian
what's wrong with you there's no Boy Scout troops around here. Stop. I'm Canadian.
Did I tell you about the time when I was in Italy and I was taking a boat between, I was in Venice and I was taking the boat between the other islands, you know, like
okay.
Murano yeah. and Burano and stuff. And there was probably like 20 people on the boat. I think that's how many it fit. And there was probably four different languages that were being spoken on the boat. And I could hear these girls behind me. There's like three of them. And they sounded like Valley Girls. And they were like, oh my God, blah, 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 blah,
were
the
they
whole
making
thing.
Fun of Americans?
No.
Oh.
They were playing it up. And some other woman was like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And they, I mean, full on. And I'm like, they're pretending because I'm from Southern California. I don't sound like that. So I could tell they were pretending. And so every island we went to, there was a stop and you had to like explore the island and then come back by a certain time and hop uh-huh. on the boat again. And at one of the stops, like the third island in, I was at the stop at the same time they were. And some woman comes up to them and they're talking and they're doing the whole thing. Like, oh my God, I went to school and it was just so terrible. Like the whole thing. And this woman goes like, where are you guys from? Thinking like, oh, they're so... And she was like, oh, we're from upstate New York.
Really?
But so they were Americans, but they were acting like a Valley or...
Yeah, they were Valley.
East Coasters pretending to be West Coasters?
It was like they were putting their American on. They were young girls, like probably college age. Mm-hmm. And I remember just feeling so fucking embarrassed. Like, oh my God. At the moment, I wrote down in my journal that it was the Kim Kardashian effect.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that was their idea of what Italy wanted to see about Americans or something. And I was so fucking embarrassed. Like, just be quiet and just...
Your job in a new country is to shut the fuck up, be good, and just pay attention and learn and soak it up and don't barf it out. Like, ew.
They were barfing it out. It was probably my fault for going to Venice, but I had to see it. You know,
you can't not go to Venice. You know, it's like the oldest place there. It's the quintessential Italian experience. You
and
know?
It's going to be gone soon, right? Isn't it like they're starting to have trouble with the, because the water's rising.
Well, they've always had trouble. They've always had trouble. It's Alta Agua.
But it's
Alta
getting,
Aqua.
Isn't it getting worse?
It's getting worse. They have built these things out in the bay that like control the water or whatever, but no, they're not going to be able to do that forever. It's coming. Yeah, for sure.
Dun, dun, dun.
So when are you going to Italy?
End of September.
And you're going to Venice and Florence. And what is this little place, other place you're going to?
Lavico Terme.
Oh.
And it's like in the foothills of the Alps.
Oh, and you have to go.
I know. Well, last night I was looking at it, the satellite view on the map, and I was like, oh, all those trees, those big mountains. Like, you know, I just wanted to.
Excitement.
You just get out there. Those trees.
I want to eat them up and put my boots on and just hike away into the forest.
And hug a tree.
And hug some trees, some Italian trees. I'm not even going to know what kind of trees there are. I'm going to have to get a field guide.
Oh, no.
For the trees and the plants. There I am at Romans. Hi, do you have any field guides?
You know,
for
they
the
probably have
Italian
an app
now?
On your phone.
I know, but I want a book. I like the book. So then I was like, then for a moment I thought, maybe it would just kick Florence to the curb and just go into the mountains and the little tiny villages and lakes and stuff, you know, because it's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not going to be there forever.
No.
The Amazon is burning. What the fuck?
Yeah, I'm really upset.
That's been the toughest part of my last.
Me too.
I could see this coming like a year and a half ago when the tariff started, because as soon as we lost like all of our as soon as he won, like I could see all the ramblings on all the Brazilians' posts like, oh, this is not going to be good.
He's
going to clear out all the Amazon and he's going to push out all these people.
Oh, what's
and then
name?
We buffooned and fumbled all those accounts with China on existing farmland here. Whenever they're going to have new farmland in Brazil, it means burn the jungle.
Right.
So I don't think that really registered with a lot of people.
No, that part didn't.
That part didn't register. No. And then now, like, they're just totally emboldened to burn and burn and burn. Like, it's not one fire. It's like a, you know, it's like a thousand fires at one time.
Yeah.
And now it's going into Bolivia and Peru. It's going to be really tough. And then, I had a really interesting week with that, you know, and
what was your emotional reaction when you heard about it?
It was super tough because I think it's one of the best things I've ever done. Like, I think, you know, like track in Nepal, and that was one of the most interesting things I've ever done. Like riding the cargo boats across the Amazon. It's the ultimate carpooling because you're in a hammock and you're so close to the person next to you, total stranger. You're almost like touching butt, you know, and you're all top
hanging,
of this boat.
Right.
Yeah. And you stop in these little villages and people are trying to sell pumas and stacks of bananas and there's cows and horses below. And, you know, you're 2-3 days, you know, on a boat, and you get out in a little village and stay for a week or so and go. And the people are just, they're really interesting because it's, whether it's a Spanish accent in Peru or Colombia or the Brazilian accent, it's like a higher, like almost Asian high tone
Oh, yeah.
You know, Spanish. Uh-huh. You know, so, and then they have their own look and their own ways, and it's super cool. It's a super cool way to cross the Amazon. It's super, you know, digger style cheap. I think it's like $15 a day for your be on the boat, your little hammock space, and your breakfast, lunch, and dinner basic. And
right.
There, and you lose a lot when you travel comfortably.
Oh, I think
you lose a lot of personal space, you know. You lose a lot.
I think she's saying you lose a lot of experience if you're just flying to a place and you're in a nice air conditioned.
Right. If whatever. You know, you take a cruise and it's like,
for sure.
There are no stories to tell.
Yeah, you've got a great story to tell because you did that.
But when you're with the people, when you're traveling with the locals and you're eating where they eat and you're talking to them and it's, you connect to that space and those people, and it's a whole different experience than, you know, going to the Hilton or the DoubleTree or the Trump Tower.
Yeah, it's a great trip, and you know, like I'd had these other surfers I'd met before that had done it, and you know, it's easier to go from west to east because the river wants to flow that way.
Oh, okay.
So if you go from like the Atlantic.
Like Peru
toward the Pacific, it's a lot longer because you're going upstream, so the boats take longer.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you just like I took like an 18-hour bus from the coast up and over the mountains in this little jungle town, hung out there, went to this big volcanic lake, and then like 5 more hours to this town, and then there's the first boat, and you just buy a hammock. There's always people selling hammocks, you know.
You buy the actual physical hammock?
Yeah, you know, they've got a captive audience, you know, and.
So you buy a hammock.
There's all these hammock vendors, and then you just wait for the next boat to come by, and you get a space on the boat, and everyone runs to the top story and puts it on these two hooks. It's just like a bunch of bars going across the boat. And you know, the bottom floor is like cows and horses and pigs and chickens and cargo. Like I put my surfboard down there. And then the other stories are, you know,
so,
people.
Okay, so they're, okay, in my head right now, I have a visual of like Noah's Ark, but then hammocks on top with people. And are you in the hammock the whole ride?
You're like, in the hammock pretty much the whole time, except for, you know, you're going to get up and walk around and
so you
go to the bathroom. You know, you
around.
Have to, you know, build a good friendship with someone. So that someone can watch your stuff and you can watch their stuff, so
right,
they can,
yeah.
So they're not just tied to their stuff the whole time,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
to walk around. And then, you know, the first boat was like 3 days and 3 nights from Yurimungas to Iquitos.
Wow.
And you get out in Iquitos, and then I stayed there like, you know, a week is like my second time being there in the jungle. And then 2 days, 2 nights to the tri-border of Colombia, Brazil, and Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And another like super sandwich boat. You know, and then you get to this town. I stayed in Colombia, like Tabatinga and Leticia. And
he remembers all the places.
I would too.
Yeah, I can't remember the
I
other
can't
stuff
remember
you were saying
shit
this morning, but
ever.
I can remember those.
Like I have to write everything down, but I'm impressed.
Yeah. Then we get to Brazil, they got the nicer, bigger boats and you can walk around and there's not like farm animals on the bottom and you're like, whoa, I'm
what is
styling,
this
yeah, and that's like a big, comfy, like
first
5 days
class.
To Manaus, and the cool thing about the Amazon is that there's no roads that go to most of those towns. It's all riverboat,
really?
And that's part of what
yeah,
this.
I've heard that, yeah.
I mean, the whole thing is that agricultural push the natives out and burn because they want to use it all for farmland.
Right.
But another big push that Bonehead. Wants to do is he wants this road to go to Suriname, to go all the way up to build a road through the Amazon so that they can export all these crops that they're now going to cut the Amazon down and grow.
Right.
And that's going to be their right, you know, their ticket to China now that they got the China soybean and corn accounts and stuff.
Right. Because we lost them. Yeah.
Right.
Because we lost those. Thank you. Which a lot of people just think about the economic thing and they might get them back. And
no,
but that
it doesn't come back.
It's probably not going to come back, those accounts.
No.
But the, you know, the jungle's definitely not going to come back, you know?
No, that's the thing is stupid, dumbass Trump. He has no broad vision. You know what I mean? Like, he does not understand the concept of a global economy or just a global community.
Oh, I think he understands. He just doesn't care.
I don't think he understands. I think he is that stupid. I think he lives in his own little snow globe of fucking feces and just wallows in there.
Tell us how you really feel, Kenneth.
Yeah, because that wasn't detailed enough. No, I've had a real tough emotional week with the yeah, Amazon because I don't want to say like it's personal to me, but like I knew I could see this coming as a slow moving train wreck, like yeah. 2 years, 18 months ago, and then now it's all happening. So, you know, I don't know.
When I woke up that morning, you know, I've been doing daily meditation and had been going to therapy and taking my Zoloft. I'm doing all the things, right? And when I saw a map,
it makes me want to vomit smoke. And cry at the same time.
I instantly had a panic attack. My stomach has been in knots since then. Just the whole idea, like, we can deal with Trump. That's going to get taken care of one way or another. Like, political stuff, one way or the other, is going to get taken care of. But we'll never get the Amazon back. That's gone.
No, we'll never get the Great Barrier Reef back. We're never going to get the glaciers back. It's all disappearing. It's going away.
And I had a visceral reaction to that this week. So I had wanted to ask you because I knew you had been there.
Yeah, it's not all him. It's the Brazilian. It's really a perfect storm of having the wrong president in Brazil and him at the same time.
Right.
We've got a lot of
and Putin egging things on from over here.
Yeah, well, obviously he's the puppet for that whole thing, you know, just like they were just trying to... Trump was just advocating to get them back in the G8, right? So that's an interesting...
Did you hear? He wants to have the next G8 or the G7
at his fucking snow globe feces festivals. Fuck!
Tell us how you really feel, Kim.
No!
Come on. Quit sugarcoating
it. I have so many bad words. I can't even.
You deserve to say some bad... Kim's had a bad few
weeks.
And you deserve to say bad words.
It's been a rough week.
It's been a rough couple weeks.
This has been a trippy day. Like, I was woken up with a phone call, like, stone cold in my sleep. My buddy Mark, concert guru, calls me, tells me that, you know, Neil Six has hung himself.
Oh,
you know,
a
guitar player for Chris Robinson.
Oh my God, you're kidding.
He played at Skull and Roses. And I was excited when he pulled in Skull and Roses. I'm like, oh my God, he drives my car. He drives an Element. How rad. You know? And
He hung himself.
Oh, and like, you know, Mark and really Jack, cool they're picture, just like really into that whole scene.
You know,
and then it's just been like I told Kim when I pulled up to her today. I woke up with that, and then I had someone. The very first time I had someone pull a knife out on the freeway. I don't know if he was going to try and throw it at me. Like,
I'm sorry to laugh.
Crocodile Dundee. It was funny. I mean, it was.
Cassie gave me a knife for my birthday. I could do that very thing. But
so
not
now,
to you.
Now you're ready. Yeah for the
Can
next
you
person.
Explain, did you cut somebody off or did he get out of his car?
It could have been something that I did that I didn't even know I was doing. I wasn't talking on the phone. I was confused because, you know, on the 5... The GPS, normally I'd take 605 to the 210, come here, but the GPS said take the 5, and I'm like, oh, this is controversial.
Oh, never take the 5.
Yeah, I always avoid the 5, but for some reason this time I just went with the GPS, right?
For our listeners around the world, we're talking about the freeway system in Southern California.
The freeway system in Southern California and the wonders of the GPS.
Yes.
You know?
The 5.
God provides service. I don't know what it stands for. Global positioning system.
Go
but it took me
piss yourself.
It took me on all these crazy side streets in LA. But before that happened, there was the turnoff from the 5, the 710 is not on the right side, it's on the
left side.
Oh,
yeah,
that is
sure.
So
it
messed up.
Threw me off.
It didn't tell you?
It probably did, but I wasn't looking at it.
They do that shit in Northern California, and I'm just like, no, 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 no. They're on the right.
Say no one more time.
No.
Okay,
bitches.
Continue with your story.
On the right side.
So I was going from the right side, merging to the left, and then there was this guy. I looked back, and I was, you know, a little, like, Middle Eastern, maybe my same type Armenian guy behind me in a little black VW, like, 5 feet behind me, and I was like, whoa, and he's like, rah, rah, rah.
And you're like, smoke some weed.
And I get over, yeah, I wanted to say, just here, man, just burn one, dude, shut up. and I'm getting off, and then, you know, the lanes are splitting, so he's going, continuing on the 5, mm-hmm. and I'm turning the 7-5. And not only does he flip me off, but he pulls out a huge knife, and I thought,
what was he going to do with that knife?
With the knife, right. Yeah. Is he going to throw it at
as
me?
As he's
like
getting
onto
another freeway.
I'm like, well, there's a first. I couldn't see his license plate because we were going off like that, and I thought, wow, this is interesting.
Did you just laugh first? At him?
I, you know, I mean, that's when he was flipping me off, I gave him the classic one-finger victory salute to him, too.
Right.
You know, and then I thought, wow, this is where we're at in the world. You know, people are going, you know,
I have found that it makes people more upset if you just laugh at them. Just go.
Oh, yeah.
That is the best burn.
Yeah.
That
the
is
best
burn.
Just, I'm not as affected as you. You're ridiculous. Calm down. Here's a little chuckle.
We did Here's that once chuckle. When we were in high school, and some guy like cruised up next to us on the street, and he was in his car driving. We were, me and a bunch of friends were walking on the sidewalk, and he drives up next to us, and he's just totally jerking off like all of his junk right there. And we stopped and pointed and laughed at him. That was our response, and I'll never forget that. And it was so satisfying. Like,
did he drive off right away? Or?
He did.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you remember that time we picked up some
hitchhikers?
Yeah, we picked those guys up.
Oh God,
we were terrible and not safe.
Stupid.
It was a safer time to pick people up.
It really was.
Was it?
No.
Really?
No, it was still creepy. I mean, I hitchhiked to the river like when I was 15. That was maybe my first big road trip, and I was so naive. I think that's what I like most about traveling is I really like just realizing how naive and sheltered, you know, I think that's the addicting part of it. But my first time hitchhiking on the river, my friends flaked out. And
you're like, I'm going to the river.
I literally looked in the mirror at my parents' house. I was 15.
Oh my God.
And I looked in the mirror and thought,
fuck it.
These days, it's not politically correct to say this, but this is like 1985. I'm like, you're a pussy, dude. You can't do this, man. You can't do this. You're not going to sit here 4th of July like a loser and just do the same old thing as everyone else. You're going to go to the river.
You need
you're
to see
go to the
boobs
river.
And bikinis.
And I was like pumping myself up. Exactly. You
boobs
need to go to the river.
Boobs and bikinis.
Yeah, I had this girlfriend out there at the time.
No, sorry, Zane.
And
okay.
And next thing I know, I made a cardboard sign and I said east on one side and Colorado River on the other. I told my parents, hey, I'm going to go out front and Stan's going to pick me up and we're going to go to the river. And I just walked down to the 210 off ramp with my blue little duffel bag with a sleeping bag and a little bong in it and some clothes and stuff. And,
what else do you need?
And I'd never hitchhiked before and I'd never seen a hitchhiker there at that Santa Anita off ramp. And all of a sudden I pull up and there's a hitchhiker there. And
I'm like,
oh, guru, you know.
Teach me your ways.
I am Grasshopper. Tell me what to do.
Right.
He says, well, I'll tell you. Don't just jump in with the first person going a short distance. Wait for someone who's going to go exactly where you want to go. Just sit back and wait for that.
Really?
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, cool. I'm 15. I don't know anything. I'm so sheltered. All I know
Had
is I want to go
eaten?
To the river. No, because it's probably like
Mom.
8 in the morning.
Okay.
Mom.
Like, he's going to be hungry.
That's
going to
be a long trip. Did you have some water? Did you
Did
bring
you
your
bring
sunscreen?
Snacks with you?
Because you're going to be standing out there in the sun.
Did you bring snacks with you?
Did you bring snacks?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I should have had a hat and sunscreen.
Yes.
No, I had like the rocker black and white stripe.
Of course you did.
Shirt. You know, at the time
oh,
I was
yeah.
less fat, more hair, more muscle. And I remember this like maybe 30-something woman in like a blue Ford Ranger, the mini one, pulls over and I'm like, where are you going? She's like, Azusa. I'm like, get him in, you know, like just threw out whatever advice that guy gave me.
You're like, Azusa! Just
the first person. Yeah, that's a little bit farther than I'm here. It's farther than Arcadia.
Minutes.
I'm going east.
5 minutes? That's like 5 miles away.
Yeah, I got in with her and then I got in with all these people and then the creepy men. This is where the hitchhiking and the creepy thing and I was totally sheltered to that.
Yeah, creepy guys.
Yeah, creepy guys.
See, girls know about the creepy guys because we're kind of, you know,
we talk,
and our moms told us about it. But guys are just as susceptible to the creepy guys as women, but the guys don't talk about it.
And Kim, you just nailed it because that was the first time in my life where I realized, oh, this is what it's like to be a girl with a creepy guy in a car committed because you're in someone else's car.
Right.
And you're literally just along for the ride.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm, you know, these various people pick me up and it's all kind of groovy. This guy in a big blue Ford pickup goes, oh, yeah, man, I used to go to the river. We're like in Pomona now. I used to go to the river, man, but, you know, just too hot. Now people are just going to the river to go to the river. They're not bringing ski boats. Or, and that was totally me. Like, I'm just going there. I'm
right,
good time.
I was going to drink and look at
boobs. You're like,
party,
boobs and bikinis. Boobs and bikinis.
Yeah, I'm going to Buckskin, man. And the guy pulled out this huge joint, and I got so high.
Oh, my God.
And I got super high. And then I got out of his car, and then I was in the car with this guy with a leg, with a cast on his leg that went up to his waist.
And Ted Bundy?
It was like a big old Oldsmobile, and I was like, dude, what happened to you? And he was like,
was it Ted Bundy?
It wasn't Ted Bundy that I know of.
That
was
his
trick. Cast on his leg?
No.
Ted Bundy, that was his trick. He had a fake cast he'd put on.
Really?
His leg. You didn't know this?
No, I don't study serial
killers. Well, I do. Keeping myself safe. Okay. Ted Bundy had a fake cast he put on his leg. He'd go to, like, college parking lots.
And have people help him.
He'd have ladies help him. And he would tell them that he needed help doing stuff, blah, blah, blah. He'd get them, like, you know, in some compromising position near his car. He'd rip the cast off, whack him over the head, and drive off with him and do all of his creepy
public service
shit.
Announcement. Thanks.
Maybe this was Ted Bundy, but
go ahead.
Maybe
it
not.
It could have been. He was around.
The story continues. So possibly I was riding with Ted Bundy, I just learned. And the possible Ted Bundy. And I remember he said, and I'm super high. And he goes, whatever you do, man, don't let anyone drop you off on Fontana. Because that place is just jacked up.
Yeah, it is.
And
for
then
sure.
Fontucky.
Yeah, he got his leg. He said his leg got cut in one of those tree trim machines. And I was just horrified. Because I just had your same reaction. I was like, oh.
Oh. Because you're like, and that was before Fargo.
It was, yeah. And I was just like, oh. And then this like, you know, kind of like.
Makes me get.
Maybe 40 or something woman in a Beamer picks me up and then she drops me off. Next thing I'm like, where is this Fontana? And then I get out of the car. I'm like,
no.
Okay.
So at this point you've been in 4 cars?
At this point I've been in, I was 13 cars total, but I can't remember at this point exactly. But,
the river?
13 hours total, something like that. And then I got in the car with this guy and he had a silver Volkswagen Rabbit with the burgundy interior,
oh, nice.
Bearded. He's maybe 30th, kind of chubby.
Uh-oh.
And now I'm burning out from the weed.
Oh, no.
I'm passing starting out in his car. And we're driving. Out. He says he's going to go 19 miles, you know, from Fontana to 19 miles from Fontana.
Right.
Next thing I know, we're like turning off at the 10 at Cabazon and on 62. I'm like,
where are we going?
Yeah. And I feel this like dude and he's like, well, there's a Playboy or there's a
oh,
girls magazine
no.
on the floorboard down there. And he's like, oh, this is just kind of gross stuff. And he start going through it. And then, and you know,
wait,
I just,
is
you know,
he still driving?
He's driving, but he's driving and he's kind of showing me the magazine at the same time. And I'm like, okay, but now, you know, if you know the area I'm talking about, like Cabazon or
yeah,
what's that, what's the,
there.
You know, that zone, there's nothing out there. And he starts like rubbing my leg and goes, you look
river.
So tense. And I'm all like, just like waking up from the burnout. And I'm so naive. I'm 15.
Did you have a knife?
I grew up in
and
Arcadia.
You're not a girl, so you don't know the signs.
I'm so sheltered. You know, we're 15. I grew up in Arcadia. Come on.
Right,
I don't know
you've
anything.
Got your bong.
Yeah, I do. I have a
and
plastic bong in my slat in the back.
Right. You're like.
I'm going to hit him over the head with a soft duffel bag. That's my weapon.
Ugh.
And then I realize, oh. This is one of those situations. This guy's gay. Light bulbs go off. But now I'm so committed that I'm like, hey, dude, where? I was just going to keep driving because I got nothing to do and you want to ride. And so I'll just keep. So I just bit my tongue.
Wow.
With like one eye on my duffel bag in the back seat. And we got to Yucca Valley before 29
yeah.
Palms.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude, I'm out. And I just like literally said that, jumped out of the car.
Bailed.
And then I was out. Oh, no.
Oh,
no.
No,
no. I didn't go all the way to Yucca Valley.
Wait.
I didn't go all the way to Yucca Valley. I got out right at that turn on the 62 and I was out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh God!
And this is the desert, people.
And this
desert.
Is the desert. Yeah, this is the desert and tweakers,
what
and I'm just totally
of the
sheltered.
What time is this too?
This is probably lunchtime, and
you
now
didn't
I'm committed.
Have any water.
Now I'm committed. I'm almost
that
halfway, and I'm almost halfway.
And it's
halfway.
What spring break or something?
It's 4th of July week.
So you're in the desert in the middle of July. Okay,
I'm in the
go
desert.
Go ahead with your story.
And then these. I get out.
It's causing me anxiety.
These girls pick me up. The two mothers are just like, oh, goodness. My mom, if my mom heard this story,
she would have.
I didn't tell the story till my mom's funeral. I was giving her a sermon. My mom never knew I tried to
deliver. There's some stories that parents don't need to know.
Uh-oh. Yeah. And then I got picked up by another dude. And by now I was desperate because I was sitting in this spot for like 2 hours. So I put a dollar on my sign. The guy's like, so why do you have a dollar on your sign? I'm like, I was just offering gas money, you know? And then that dude was also creepy. And then I got out of his car in the middle of nowhere. And then these girls that were waitresses at the Sundance at the river were going all the way where I wanted to go, pick me up. But they took me to like 29 Palms. They're like, we're going to a friend's house. We're going to do some stuff. If you're still on the road when we get there, we'll pick you up. And they didn't, but I jumped in the car with this old man and a Rambler. We had to pull over on that BFE road. That's like 120 miles and nothing.
Because he had a Rambler.
We had to pull over all the time to pour water in his radiator.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, he got dropped me off in the middle of nowhere at some other stop sign for the river. And these like Native American women picked me up in a big truck.
And you knew you were good.
Yeah. They dropped me off right at like my girlfriend's best friend's house.
So did you know that once you got to the river, you would have a ride home, a guaranteed ride home?
Oh, heck no. I knew I was just hitchhiking back.
Did you hitchhike back?
I did. Yeah. Oh, it was easier, though, coming back because a lot of people are like, they're going to go all the way to San Bernardino or all the way to Fontana.
Oh, yeah.
Because there aren't too many. Yeah.
Yeah. That makes sense. I remember Jeff Giles grew up.
You need not to take a ride with by then, right?
Well, no. I was still pretty nice. I was just like, yeah, I was 15. I was like, oh, well, I hope this works out. And I remember I saw this guy, Jeff Giles. He grew up like right down the street from me in the back of a pickup truck. And he saw me and waved. In the back of the days when he could ride a pickup truck, but he didn't pick me up, and I'm like somewhere out there in Bernardino.
You're like, dude, really?
So what I'm hearing though is that that experience helped you see like what it is that women have to go through all the time. Like
it did because it was the first time that I realized what it's like to be a woman with a creepy man and be in a car and be in an uncomfortable situation. I mean, I didn't feel as vulnerable as a woman because at that time I was like working out and lifting weights and stuff.
You could have defended yourself. Yeah.
I mean, but it just would have been like uncomfortable.
So when the Me Too movement all popped up, do you feel like you had a better understanding because you'd had those experiences?
I think every guy had it because, you know, to be real with you, and now we're in this moment right now, in these years right now, I think that that's a lot more conscious. But I think in the 80s, there's almost two kinds of guys. The ones that will say, I was an angel, and the ones that will be like, I probably shouldn't have done some of those things that I did. Mm-hmm. You know, like I probably shouldn't have treated this person this way. Probably shouldn't have done that. That might have felt that might have made them feel really uncomfortable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
So I think that, you know, I think it made probably a lot of people realize, like, yeah, that was not really that cool, you know?
Wow. We've never gotten... Well, actually, Doug's spoken about the Me Too stuff. But
it's a slippery slope.
So please waste my time. I'll gladly sit here.
Curio Podcast is a Porch Swing production. Big thanks to all of our contributors and special guests. For more info, please visit Twitter at Podcast Curio, Curio Podcast on Facebook, and CurioPodcast.org.
I love to hear.